I was 11. Halloween fell on a Friday, and the night felt colder than usual. The kind that clings behind your ears and makes the hair on your arms stand up. Our town had one rule. Everyone knew it, even if they didn't really talk about it. The tracks cut a straight line through the edge of town, just before the woods. On the far side was a dead-end street, maybe 10 houses. No one we knew ever lived there. What was strange was that there was no haunted stories or urban legends. Instead, there were vague adult shrugs like, "It's not a good neighborhood. There's nothing over there anymore." But every Halloween, parents repeated it in the same stiff tone. "Stay on this side of the tracks." And every year, we obeyed. Until one. Danny, Marcus, Ty and I were halfway through our route, bags half full, when Marcus spoke up. "What if we go to one house just past the tracks?" Ty immediately shook his head. "My mum will kill me." "So we don't tell her," Danny grinned. He pointed down the street at the far end of the cul-de-sac, past the slats of the crossing sign, where a faint orange glow appeared. There was a jack-o'-lantern flickering in the low light. "Someone's expecting us," Danny joked. We waited until most of the porch lights behind us had gone dark, when the sidewalks were thinning out and the parents had started calling kids in for the night. Then we slipped across the train tracks. As soon as my foot hit the other side, I felt it. The temperature dipped and the air turned wet and sour. A low fog sat on the pavement like spilled smoke, unmoving. It didn't shift with our steps. The houses looked strange, as if they'd been posed there, with their painted shutters, raked lawns, and decorations out front. Everything looked hand-built, like props on a set. Pumpkins with faces carved too symmetrically, paper ghosts hanging from trees, all cut from the same stencil. No movement behind any window. We kept walking. The only sound was the crunch of candy wrappers in our bags. The house with the jack-o'-lantern was third from the end, porch light blinking slowly, plastic skeleton on a swing. A bowl of candy sat waiting on a small table, piled with black-wrapped toffees in perfect neat rows. Danny didn't hesitate and grabbed a fistful. I watched Marcus and Ty took one each, then shoved them in their mouths, laughing like it was all just a game. But I didn't eat mine. Instead, I dropped it into my coat pocket. Something about the waxy crinkle under my fingers made my skin crawl. "Guess that's it," Marcus said. That's when we heard it. Click. A porch light from two houses down flickered on, then another and another. Down the cul-de-sac, porch lights began turning on one by one, each illuminating an empty porch, a bowl of black candy, a grinning jack-o'-lantern. A lot of lights for a street no one supposedly lives on. It felt like someone had been waiting. And now that we'd come, they wanted us to stay. We kept walking the loop, moving in a half circle that curved back toward the tracks. No one spoke much anymore. The air felt heavier with each step, like the fog was wrapping around our ankles and slowing us. The porch lights now cast long shadows over lawns, putting us on edge, thinking someone was nearby. Still, there were no sounds but our footsteps and the faint rustle of costumes. Then, Danny started acting weird. He jogged ahead, spinning once in the middle of the street like he was putting on a show. "You guys are killing the vibe," he said, too loud. "It's just Halloween." Marcus gave him a look. "Calm down." Danny ignored him. Something had caught his attention. a low branch hanging over a yard with something swaying from the end of it. A mask. It was paper, maybe, or something close, pale and stretched with angular eye holes and long, sunken features. It looked too specific to be random, not like a decoration, but like something someone had made for a reason. Danny unhooked it from the branch and turned to us, holding it up. "Now this is cool." "Leave it," I said, without thinking. "Seriously." But he was already sliding it over his face. The moment he let go, the mask seemed to settle, molding to his skin, more like latex than paper. He tapped the cheek with a knuckle. "Fits perfect." No one laughed. Ty took a step back. The edges of the mask sat flush against his skin, almost like it wasn't a mask at all, just a second face, one that didn't blink. Then his tone changed. "Let's finish the loop," he said. "We're almost there." I should have said no. I think we all should have. But none of us wanted to be the one to break. So, we followed. As we turned the bend of the cul-de-sac, we saw the first figure step into the street, then another, and another. They moved slowly, walking side by side, like they were part of a performance none of us had agreed to watch. Men and women in old-fashioned clothes, floor-length skirts, button coats, faded vests, all stitched in muted colors and soft textures. They wore masks like Danny's. All of them had the same unsettling stillness to their faces. Not joyless or angry, just wrong. And they were heading toward us, quiet as fog. The moment the parade stopped, it was like the whole street exhaled. Every marcher froze in place. All at once, their heads turning slightly toward us, like animals catching a scent. None of us moved at first. Then Ty whispered, "Go." And we did. Our footsteps thundered across the asphalt, too loud to be safe. The fog seemed to drag at our legs. My bag of candy bounced against my side with each sprinting step. I didn't even look behind me until we ducked behind a low hedge, hearts rattling in our chests. That's when we realized Danny wasn't with us. He'd been at the back, always the slowest, and somehow he hadn't made it. I peeked through a gap in the branches. He was still in the street, lumbering away, no more than a dozen feet from the front of the parade. The nearest mass figure glided forward toward him, then another. They were calm and confident, like they already had him. Danny didn't call out, nor turn around. He looked cornered, shoulders hunched, lost in thought. Then he did something I didn't expect. None of us did. Just before the nearest figure reached him, he slipped it back on, the mask he still clutched in his hands. It didn't crinkle or bend. The thing folded into place over his face like it belonged there. The figure paused, inches away, as if inspecting him, then turned away. The next marcher passed by, and another, until the final one, which led him towards the pack, not giving him a chance to slip away. Danny followed, motionless in the stream of them, now just another mass silhouette among the coats and silent steps, blending in, avoiding whatever fate we imagined for anyone who was caught. From the hedge, Marcus whispered, "What do we do?" But no one had an answer. We were kids. They weren't. And now they had Danny. We waited until the parade drifted out of sight, disappearing down the end of the cul-de-sac. Then we ran back across the tracks, back toward the houses with store-bought candy and real people inside. We kept glancing back, hoping he'd followed us. But Danny never did. We waited. Someone would call, we figured. Maybe Danny would text. Maybe he'd show up at school on Monday like nothing happened, rolling his eyes and calling us babies for running off. We kept checking our phones, refreshing apps, watching the group chat. Nothing. Not that night, not the next morning, not even a, "Where are you guys?" By noon, panic had started to settle in our stomachs like sour milk. "He probably got in trouble," Ty said, "like grounded or something. Maybe his phone got taken." "Then he called from the house phone," Marcus said. After lunch, we couldn't take it anymore. We decided to go back across the train tracks, but this time in the daylight, so it wouldn't be scary. Everything's less scary when the sun's out, right? Danny was probably hiding, embarrassed, waiting for things to blow over. We crossed the tracks again. Only this time, it wasn't foggy. It was just dead. The air was dry, the pavement cracked, the grass yellowed and stiff. The houses looked different in daylight, no longer mysterious, just ruined. Peeling paint, boarded windows. One had a flat tire, half buried in weeds, leaning against the porch. Like no one had lived there in decades, a stark contrast to how it was that night. There were no lights, no jack-o'-lanterns, no decorations, not even left over, like you'd imagine when you see a place abandoned. The place was cleaned up of all things Halloween, despite the evidence that no one had been there in a long time. We retraced our steps, stuck close together. My skin felt too tight, like I was about to bolt at the slightest sound. Then we found the hedge. And from there, we saw it. Danny's candy bag was sitting in the road where he was caught, still full, unopened. The wrapper on top hadn't even been crinkled. Marcus finally whispered, "Okay, we have to tell someone." So we did. We told our parents, expecting the usual, lectures, sighs, and a solution. Adults always fix things. They called the teachers when we forgot homework, they found lost dogs, they made everything go back to normal. So we figured this would be the same. A search was launched, police, neighbors, flashlights cutting through brush behind the cul-de-sac, volunteers canvassing with missing posters, and we standing there while they asked the same questions over and over. "Are you sure you were here? Are you sure you didn't just lose him?" But no matter how many times we told the story, the truth, no one found a thing. No Danny, no parade, no mask, no trace. Just an empty street behind the tracks, and a silence that followed us all the way home. Time passed. The posters came down, the search stopped, people stopped asking questions, at least the real ones. But the story, that didn't die. It morphed. People started calling it the Halloween Vanishing. They made it sound like a ghost story. A kid crossed the tracks one Halloween night and never came back. Don't be stupid like him. They didn't say his name anymore, not in the versions that spread. Danny became the boy, an example, a warning. At school, new kids would whisper it to each other in the weeks leading up to Halloween. There were made-up details. "He dared a ghost to show itself. He knocked on the wrong door. He stepped on a grave hidden under a porch." We never corrected them. What would we even say? that the truth was worse than all the stories combined, that we saw him disappear, that we ran. Eventually, even Marcus stopped talking about it. Ty moved away the following year. But I couldn't forget. Not when I saw porch lights flicker, not when I passed the edge of the tracks on my bike and felt something watching. The warning stuck, though. Every Halloween, parents whisper the same things to their kids. Don't cross the tracks. It works. No one does. Not anymore. No one. Except me. Because I needed to know what happened. Someone had to go back. So, I made a plan. I told my friends I was done for the night. Tired, maybe coming down with something. I waved them off as they headed up toward Maple Street, then slipped away. No one noticed when I double-backed and headed away from the busy streets, back toward where everything happened. When I reached the tracks, my hands were already shaking. The fog was thinner this time, but the cold was the same. The kind that didn't just bite your skin, but soaked through it. The cul-de-sac waited like it had been holding its breath for a full year. The air felt hushed, heavy, ready. I didn't knock on doors, didn't speak. I walked fast, keeping to the sidewalk, eyes forward. Porch lights flicked on as I passed. First one, then another, a quiet relay, like they recognized me. I found the hedge. It looked the same, overgrown, tangled, brittle from the cold. I dropped to one knee and crawled behind it, into the same hollow where we'd all crouched the year before, knees pressed to the dirt, limbs tucked tight. The same place where we'd watched Danny stop running. I took myself low and held my breath, waiting. And there it was. The parade. Same masks, same clothes, same empty rhythm. They march past with heads tilted slightly forward, as if sniffing the air for something. Not a single footstep out of sync. My chest tightened. I told myself I just needed to see it again. Just needed to know it wasn't a trick or a story we told ourselves wrong. But then something shifted beside me. A soft exhale, barely more than a stir in the air. I turned my head and caught my breath. Someone was already there, crouched in the dark beside me, close enough to touch. The shape of him was impossible to mistake. Too familiar. The hoodie, faded blue with a frayed pocket seam. The jeans with one cuff always slightly rolled, as if he never learned to fold them properly. The worn-out sneakers with one fluorescent orange lace. Danny. I wanted to speak, to say his name, grab his arm. But one motion made me stop. A hand raised, signaling me not to move. My throat locked up. My chest felt caved in. His head turned slowly, mask creased under his hood, the same mask he pulled from the tree a year ago. Wrinkled material stretched too tight, hollow eyes and a yellowing mouth. His hand rose and pressed one finger to the mask's lips in a silent, shushing motion. Then he stood, not rushed, not robotic, just quiet, steady. And walked out from behind the hedge, toward the street, toward the parade. He didn't run or look back. He just stepped between the masked marchers and fell in line, as if he'd always been a part of it, as if this was where he belonged now. I waited, frozen behind the hedge, until the last figure disappeared around the bend. Then I ran. I didn't stop until I reached the tracks, crossed them like they were the edge of a cliff, and when I was safely back in my neighborhood, I finally let myself breathe. I couldn't tell anyone, not my friends or my parents, not the cops who'd closed Danny's case and turned him into a bedtime warning. Because how could I explain it? What would I even say? That Danny had become one of them? That he, for some reason, chose to stay, or was forced to? I didn't know what the mask meant, or if Danny was trapped, if he was happy, or if there was anything left of him in there at all. I just knew he saw me, and that he remembered. And I still don't know which part hurts worse.